At dawn on Saturday, March 16th, 1521, we came upon a high land at a distance of 300 leagues from the islands of Latrone, an island named Zamal. The following day, the Captain General desired to land on another island, which was uninhabited, and lay to the right of the above-mentioned island in order to be more secure and to get water and have some rest. On Monday afternoon, March 18th, we saw a boat coming towards us with 9 men in it. Therefore, the Captain General ordered that no one should move or say a word without his permission. When those men reached the shore, their chief went immediately to the Captain General, giving signs of joy because of his arrival. 5 of the most ornately adorned of them remained with us, while the rest went to get some others who were fishing, and so they all came. The Captain General, seeing that they were reasonable men, ordered food to be set before them and gave them red caps, mirrors, combs, bells, ivory, and other things. When they saw the captain's courtesy, they presented fish, a jar of palm wine, which they called uraca, figs more than 1 palmo long, and others which were smaller and more delicate, and 2 coconuts. They had nothing else then, but made us signs with their hands that they would bring umai, or rice, and coconuts, and many other articles of food within 4 days. Coconuts are fruit of the palm tree. Just as we have bread, wine, oil, and milk, so these people get everything from that tree. They get wine in the following manner. They bore a hole into the heart of the said palm at the top, called palmito, from which distills a liquor which resembles white must. That liquor is sweet but somewhat tart, and is gathered in canes of bamboo, as thick as the leg and thicker. They fasten the bamboo to the tree at evening for the morning, and the morning for the evening. That palm bears a fruit, namely the coconut, which is as large as their head or thereabouts. Its outside husk is green and thicker than 2 fingers. Certain filaments are found in that husk, whence is made cord for binding together their boats. And it has a taste resembling the almond. It could be dried and made into bread. These people became very familiar to us. They told us many things, their names and those of some of the islands that could be seen from that place. These people go naked, wearing but 1 piece of palm tree cloth around their privies. The males, large and small, have their privies pierced from one side to the other near the head, with a gold or tin bolt as large as a goose quill. In both ends of the same bolt, some have what resembles a spear with points upon the ends. Others are like the head of a cart nail. I very often asked many, both old and young, to see their privies, because I could not believe it. In the middle of the bolt is a hole through which they urinate. The bolt and the spurs always hold firm. They say that their women wish it so, and if they did otherwise, they would not have communication with them. Those people make use of that device because they are of weak nature. They have as many wives as they wish, but one of them is the principal wife. Whenever any of our men went ashore, both by day and by night, everyone invited him to eat and drink. Their viands are half-cooked and very salty. They drink frequently and copiously from the jars through those small reeds, and one of their meals lasts for 5 or 6 hours. The women loved us very much more than their own men. They practice the following ceremonies when one of their chiefs dies. First of all, the chief women of the place go to the house of the deceased. The deceased is placed in the middle of the house in a box. Ropes are placed around the box in the manner of a palisade, to which many branches of trees are attached. In the middle of each branch hangs a cotton cloth, like a curtained canopy. The most principal women sit under these hangings and are all covered with white cotton cloth, each one by a girl who fans her with a palm leaf fan. The other women sit around the room, sadly. Then there is one woman who cuts off the hair of the deceased very slowly with a knife. Another, who was the principal wife of the deceased, lies down upon him and places her mouth, her hands, and her feet upon those of the deceased. When the former is cutting off the hair, the latter weeps, and when the former finishes the cutting, the latter sings. There are many porcelain jars containing fire about the room, and myrrh, storax, and bezoin, which makes a strong odour through the house. Then they bury the body and the same box, which is shut in a log by means of wooden nails and covered and enclosed by logs of wood. Every night, about midnight in that city, a jet-black bird, as large as a crow, was wont to come, and no sooner had it thus reached the houses than it began to screech, so that all the dogs began to howl, and that screeching and howling would last for 4 or 5 hours. But those people would never tell us the reason for it. On Friday, April 26th, Zula, a chief of the island of Matan, sent one of his sons to present 2 goats to the captain general and to say that he would send him all that he promised, but that he had not been able to send it to him because of the other chief, Selapulapu, who refused to obey the King of Spain. He requested the captain to send him only 1 boatload of men on the next night so that they might help him and fight against the other chief. The captain general decided to go thither with 3 boatloads. We begged him repeatedly not to go, but he, like a good shepherd, refused to abandon his flock. At midnight, 60 men of us set out armed, with corslets and helmets, together with the Christian king, the prince, some of the chief men, 20 or 30 Balangillas. We reached Matan 3 hours before dawn. The captain did not wish to fight them, but sent a message to the natives by the morrow that if they would obey the King of Spain, recognize the Christian king as their sovereign, and pay us our tribute, he would be their friend. But that if they wished otherwise, they should wait to see how our lances wounded. They replied that if we had lances, they had lances of bamboo and stakes hardened with fire. When morning came, 49 of us leaped into the water up to our thighs and walked through water for more than 2 crossbow flights before we could reach the shore. The boats could not approach nearer because of certain rocks in the water. The other 11 men remained behind to guard the boats. When we reached land, those men had formed in 3 divisions to the number of more than 1,500 persons. When they saw us, they charged down upon us with exceeding loud cries, 2 divisions on our flanks and the other on our front. When the captain saw that, he formed us into 2 divisions, and thus did we begin to fight. The musketeers and crossbowmen shot from a distance for about 30 minutes, but uselessly, for the shots only passed through the shields, which were made of thin wood, and the arms of the bearers. The captain cried to them, "Cease firing, cease firing," but his order was not at all heeded. When the natives saw that we were shooting our muskets to no purpose, crying out, they determined to stand firm. When our muskets were discharged, the natives would never stand still, but leapt hither and thither, covering themselves with their shields. They shot so many arrows at us and hurled so many bamboo spears, some of them tipped with iron, at the captain general, besides pointed stakes hardened with fire, stones, and mud, that we could scarcely defend ourselves. Seeing that, the captain general sent some men to burn their houses in order to terrify them. When they saw their houses burning, they were roused to greater fury. 2 of our men were killed near the houses, while we burned 20 or 30 houses. So many of them charged down upon us that they shot the captain through the right leg with a poisoned arrow. On that account, he ordered us to retire slowly, but the men took to flight, except 6 or 8 of us who remained with the captain. The natives shot only at our legs, for the latter were bare, and so many were the spears and stones that they hurled at us that we could offer no resistance. The mortars in the boats could not aid us as they were too far away, so we continued to retire for more than a good crossbow flight from the shore, always fighting up to our knees in the water. The natives continued to pursue us, and picking up the same spear 4 or 6 times, hurled it at us again and again. Recognizing the captain, so many turned upon him that they knocked his helmet off his head 2 times, but he always stood firmly like a good knight, together with some others. Thus did we fight for more than an hour, refusing to retire further. An Indian hurled a bamboo spear into the captain's face, but the latter immediately killed him with his lance, which he left in the Indian's body. Then, trying to lay hand on sword, he could draw it out but halfway, because he had been wounded in the arm with a bamboo spear. When the natives saw that, they all hurled themselves upon him. One of them wounded him on the left leg with a large cutlass, which resembled a scimitar, only being larger. That caused the captain to fall face downward, when immediately they rushed upon him with iron and bamboo spears, until they killed our mirror, our light, our comfort, and our true guide. When they wounded him, he turned back many times to see whether we were all in our boats. Thereupon, beholding him dead, we, wounded, retreated as best we could to the boats, which were already pulling off. Had it not been for the unfortunate captain, not a single one of us would have been saved in the boats, for while he was fighting, the others retired to the boats. I hope, through the efforts of your most illustrious lordship, that the fame of our so noble captain will not become effaced with the times. He was more constant than ever anyone else in the greatest of adversity. He endured hunger better than all the others, and more accurately than any man in the world did he understand sea charts and navigation. That battle was fought on Saturday, April 27th, 1521.